the history now, as it happens, what was called the dissenting voices and the marginal voices. The marginal and dissenting voices have now pretty much moved center stage, and what was the official interpretation or the mainstream interpretation has now been pretty much demolished. On the question of the Palestinian refugees, you can say, for example, there are differences of opinion about exactly the extent to which 1948 was an ethnic cleansing. People like Benny Morris, who's the main Israeli historian on 1948, will say it was, will say it was a partial ethnic cleansing. Other Israelis and non-Israelis, people like Baruch Kimmerling or others, they'll say it was an ethnic cleansing from beginning to end. But they'll all agree it was some form of ethnic cleansing. That much there's a consensus on. Even conservative Israeli historians like the biographer of Ben-Gurion, Shabtai Tevith, Tevith will tell you it was an ethnic cleansing beginning with the Arab invasion. Well, that's already half of the Palestinians, and he concedes, were expelled in 1948. So you have, on the historical side, I gave you one illustration with the refugee question, but on the historical side, you have basically a consensus about what happened over the last 100 years. I won't say there's a consensus on all minor points, but there's certainly a consensus on major points. There are some areas of disagreement, not in my opinion profound, except for a couple of places. But you can say that on the historical side, on the question of facts, strictly on the question of facts, what happened, there's very little controversy any longer among historians about the historical record. That's not a subject of great disputation. If there's not much disputation in the historical record, when we come to the human rights side of the question, that is to say, what's happening now in the occupied territories, in fact, there's no dispute at all, and I mean that quite literally. There are multiple human rights organizations working in the occupied territories in Israel. There are the main ones, Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, which have a global mandate, and also amid a global mandate, they discuss monitor the Israel-Palestine conflict. So you have the large organizations. Then you have the main Israeli human rights organization, B'Tselem, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories, very reputable and very exacting. And then you have all these other human rights organizations there. You have Physicians for Human Rights, Israel, Public Committee Against Torture, Israel, all of these local organizations which are working on more narrow issues on the human rights questions in the occupied territories. Now there, even though the organizations have their own research staffs and their own individual field staffs, and even though they're all very independent-minded, if you read their reports, there's agreement not only on the major, substantive issues, but there's agreement on the details. I had the good or bad fortune over the past several months of going through all the human rights reports from, say, the last four or five years. And it's a lot. It's about 3,000 pages or more. It's a huge amount of material devoted to the human rights situation in the occupied territories. Well, you couldn't find any disagreement on anything. On the major points, the minor points, the trivial points, they all agreed on everything. There's a, you can say here, you can use the word consensus without qualification. It's not a broad consensus. It's not, as people incorrectly use the word, general consensus. There's a consensus. No disagreement whatsoever on what happened. You take the case, for example, of Jenin, the siege of Jenin, which the culmination of Operation Defensive Shield in April 2002. You opened up the Human Rights Watch report. It says that Israel committed humanitarian crimes and crimes against humanity. You opened up the Amnesty International report. They say the same thing. You opened up the B'Tselem report. They say the same thing. No controversy, no disagreement whatsoever. And that brings me to sort of the topic of my talk this evening, namely, if what I say is true, There's a broad consensus on the historical question, and there is a consensus without qualification on the human rights question, then what accounts for all of the controversy surrounding the Israel-Palestine conflict? What accounts for this kind of violent disputation, disagreement over the conflict? And what I want to suggest this evening is that there are basically two kinds of disagreement on the Israel-Palestine conflict. There is what I would call real, authentic disagreements, which people can, those involved in politics have to contend with, because they're real and they're not, they confront real life issues. And then there are the fabricated, contrived, fraudulent forms of disagreement. Excuse me. Let me begin with the real disagreements, the ones about which we have to confront the reality of. Let's take as an example the one I gave a few moments ago, namely the refugee question. Now, you can agree the fact, you can agree with the factual record that the Palestinians suffered an ethnic cleansing in 1948. That's a historical question. It's a factual question. But then there is a moral question, and the moral answer does not follow from the factual one. That is, you can say, yes, it was an ethnic cleansing, but you can also say, I think that's a good thing, that not all ethnic cleansings are bad. Some ethnic cleansings are bad, some ethnic cleansings are good. That's a moral judgment. So the main Israeli historian on the Palestinian refugees, Benny Morris, he says, yes, it was a partial ethnic cleansing, but personally, I think that was a good thing. He says that the ethnic cleansing of North America was a good thing because it helped create a vibrant democracy in America. So it was a good thing. And he says that the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians was also a good thing. In fact, he says, I think Ben-Gurion's big mistake in 1948 is that he didn't expel all the Palestinians. He should have expelled them from the area that became Israel. He should have expelled them from the West Bank, and he should have expelled them from the Gaza. He should have cleared out all the Palestinians, and then we wouldn't have these problems today. Well, that's a moral judgment. He doesn't dispute the facts, though lately his ravings have now started to teeter into the netherworld. He doesn't dispute the facts. He just renders a different moral judgment on those facts. Or you can take the case of the distinguished professor of ethics at Harvard Law School, Alan Dershowitz. And if you open up his book, Chutzpah, he says that, as far as I'm concerned, he says, ethnic cleansings are, quote, a fifth-rate moral issue and no different. He says, and they're analogous, I'm now quoting him, ethnic cleansings are analogous to massive urban renewal. You know, no problem there. So, you know, when the Spanish expelled the Jews in 1492, it wasn't ethnic cleansing, it was just massive urban renewal. Okay, those are moral judgments. They happen to be Nazi moral judgments, but they're moral judgments. And people are allowed to have different moral opinions. Leaving aside, you know, their world and returning to the moral universe of normal human beings, even in the moral universe of normal human beings, there's still room for disagreement. Because you can agree on the factual question, namely it was an ethnic cleansing. You can agree on the moral question, that is, the ethnic cleansing was a colossal crime inflicted on the Palestinian people. You can also agree on the legal question, namely those who suffered ethnic cleansing have the right to return to their homes. That's agreement on the historical question, agreement on the moral question, and agreement on the legal question. And there's a pretty solid, broad consensus of agreement, as I say, when we leave aside the Nazi moral universe and enter the universe of normal human beings. If you look at Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, They all issued statements, very firm statements, surprisingly to me, incidentally, but it tells you how independent and serious these human rights organizations have become. They all issued very strong statements saying the Palestinian right of return cannot be abrogated. They have that right. It's under international law. You can't change it. So you can agree on the factual, the moral, the legal question, but you can have very substantial disagreement on the political question. Namely, you can say, yes, it was an ethnic cleansing. Yes, it was morally wrong. Yes, they have the legal right to return, but politically, it's infeasible, it's unrealizable, and that right is going to have, the Palestinians are going to have to forfeit that right. Even though they have the right, it's not realizable. That's a political judgment. I don't like to speak for him. He can speak for himself quite eloquently, and then some, but that's Professor Chomsky's view. That the right of return is unrealizable, it's infeasible, and his point of view is to insist on this right, that's the most immoral of things, because you're creating illusions for the Palestinians, for example, in the refugee camps in Lebanon. You're creating illusions for them and not allowing them to move on in their lives. And that's immoral, because it's never going to happen, that the implementation of the right of return. I'm not saying I agree or disagree. I'm simply saying that people can have, you know, agreement on major areas, factual, legal, moral, and still there can be room for real disagreement on political questions. And I don't think it's wise, or do I think it's accurate, to write off those people who disagree with you politically on those questions as the enemy. Those are political judgments. And we have to remember that politics, at the end of the day, is a lot of it is about judgment. Good judgment, bad judgment, wrong judgment, and right judgment. And people are entitled to their judgments without being written off as the enemy on these questions. That, to me, is an example of what we can call legitimate disagreement on the Israel-Palestine conflict. I have to emphasize, however, just so there's no misconstruing my remarks, that at the end of the day, there really isn't that much disagreement among people, real disagreement among people about how to resolve the conflict. There are areas of disagreement, and that right of return is one of those areas of disagreement. But the broad framework for resolving a conflict is not really the subject of any controversy at all. So, for example, on the question of the two-state settlement. If you look at the votes in the General Assembly, I'll just give you the consensus for a two-state settlement has now been with us for about 30 years. Since the mid-1970s, there's been a broad consensus in the international community to resolve the conflict through a two-state settlement of it. Just to give you a couple of examples, you go to 1989, the UN General Assembly, it votes on a two-state settlement, and the vote is 151-3. The three dissenting countries opposing the two-state settlement are the United States, Israel, and the island state of Dominica. That's it. There were 154 member states of the United Nations, 151 for the two-state settlement, three against, the United States, Israel, and Dominica. Now, between 1989 and today, the world has really profoundly changed. Again, another one of those words I don't like, but I'll use it now because it actually works. Geopolitically, the world has profoundly changed. Geographically, some of you will be surprised to learn, as I was surprised to learn, that in 1989, there were 154 member states of the United Nations. Now there are 191 in 15 years. You can do the math yourself, but there are somewhere on the order of 40 new countries in the United Nations. That's a dramatic change, and that dramatic change is a part and parcel of the political change that occurred in the last 15 years, namely an entire social system, the Soviet system, disappeared. So we had profound political changes, profound geographical changes. What's quite striking is Notwithstanding these profound changes, geopolitical changes, the consensus on resolving the conflict has remained remarkably stable. So if you look at the votes in the General Assembly for the years 2004 as well. If you look at the votes in the two-state settlement, it's always 160, 150 on the one side, the world, and then on the other side, it's always the United States, Israel, and you can check for yourselves because I think it is posted on the web. The dissenting countries is usually six. The United States is, not usually, let me amend that, always. The United States, Israel, Federated States of Micronesia, Marshall Islands, Nauru, Palau, and Tuvalu. That's it. For those of you who are embarrassed to admit you've never heard of Nauru, Palau, and Tuvalu, either ashamed of your ignorance or your lack of political correctness, I'll admit as well, I had never heard of Nauru, Tuvalu, and Palau. Palau, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I subsequently learned that Nauru is a square block somewhere in the South Sea Islands. Its main export is bird droppings, guano, I think is the politically correct term. Tuvalu is a neighbor of Nauru. Tuvalu is suffering a major problem now. It's disappearing due to global warming. The tide is rising and Tuvalu is disappearing. There's an interesting story there because Tuvalu is disappearing because of global warming, and we all know the reason we have global warming is because the United States refuses to sign the Kyoto Protocol. So because the United States refuses to sign the Kyoto Protocol, we have global warming, and because of global warming, the tide is rising, and because the tide is rising, Tuvalu is disappearing, and if Tuvalu disappears, Israel will lose one of its main allies in the world. So it's only a matter of time before Israel accuses the United States of anti-Semitism.